This is .NET Cast with hosts Mark Baker and Nick Hemdahl.
Instead of choosing between Windows and Unix, MIS organizations are opting for a mix of the two operating systems. For seamless cross-platform operation, visit www.mkssoftware.com.
And now introducing your host for .NET Cast, Mark Baker.
Welcome to .NET Cast. I'm your host, Mark Baker. Thanks for joining us again. With me tonight is my co-host, Nick Hemdahl. Hey, Nick.
Hey, Mark. We're going to have another great show tonight on .NET. And don't forget, you can always find us on the web at www.ddj.com/podcast/.NET Cast/.
In this episode, I start out by asking Microsoft Patterns and Practices Development Lead Peter Provost about the differences between CAB state management and the new .NET 2.0 system.configuration namespace. One last thing I wanted to touch on with CAB before we get on to the software factory is really with state, because I know that's an area that's sort of murky, at least for me, as to how that overlaps with something, for example, like .NET 2.0's application settings base, which is the new class they provided for developers to interact with app config or with user config, depending upon your situation, to actually store application or user-defined settings data. So how would somebody approach that? They've got data, state they need to manage within the context of the app, and they're going, well, should I do this with state? Should I do this with application settings base? Should I do it with a work item? I mean, what would be the rationale behind why you'd use something like state?
So I typically use state. I'll be honest with you, I don't use state very much.
Yeah.
I find that the work item is itself already a container of well-addressable, discoverable things, and so I find I don't need state very much. I typically will use state for transient stuff, you know, for the bulletin board, the classic named bulletin board pattern.
Right.
I can stick something in there by name, and somebody else can find it by name, and there it is. It's available to us while the app is running. I try not to make that bulletin board be an explicit data passing mechanism, right? So I try not to do things like put something in the state, then make a call on this other guy who's going to expect to find it in the state.
That
feels really wrong to me. So I'll use the state for simple transient properties and data that are just kind of describing the context of this work item at a name value pair level.
Mm.
Now, how that relates to the application settings one is mostly one of scope. This using the state allows you to confirm that your scoping of that state is to the work item you're in. And when you use the .NET one, you're scoping differently. And so if you find that valuable in saying that this is scoped to the work item, then you might find state more appropriate.
That's great.
I can give you at least the next 20 minutes. No problem.
Okay.
I'm fine.
All right. Well, let's dig into the Smart Client Software Factory, which was recently renamed, I guess, from the Smart Client Baseline Architecture Toolkit. I guess we'll start out with, what was the rationale behind the name change? What were you guys thinking there?
Well, there's a number of things here. We have all been recognizing internal to the team that this was really a software factory, but at least in spirit. You know, it was about generalizing a certain set of problems and providing a tooling for kind of code generation and specifying and bringing forward a running application that kind of meets the initial starting requirements. And that's really what a software factory is all about. It's about saying, you know, if you can conform yourself to this particular definition of the problem, then we can probably help generate an application very cool. And so the Smart Client Baseline Architecture Toolkit was very obviously heading in that direction. We had a rich set of documentation describing the problems. We had good how-to guides with step-by-steps on how and when to do certain things. And we were using Guidance Automation Toolkit to start to do Visual Studio automation for code generation and code manipulation of your application.
Mm.
And so this was very obviously a software factory with a different name, as the project started to evolve. And so we finally hit a point where we realized that we should just rename it and call a spade and go with it. And so we did. And we checked with our community first and said, hey, do you guys agree with us that we're seeing a software factory here? And they said, yes, we do. We think that's the right name. And so we switched it.
I know you guys have been really, really hard at work on the software factory. I mean, there's been weekly releases for the last several months. When it was SCBAT, now it's SCSF. Which, by the way, are you guys referring to it internally? Do you actually call it SCSF or do you use some other?
Yeah.
SCSF?
Yeah, we call it SCSF.
I thought maybe you'd have a buzzword for it, but you know, at this point, but.
No, we're not a code name kind of a team.
So the SCSF is basically encapsulating best practices and guidance from you guys on how to build smart client apps using CAB. So what actually makes up SCSF? I mean, what developers get if they, for example, if they're saying, well, do I start with SCSF or do I start with CAB? I mean, I want to build a smart client. It's what I want to do, but where should I start? So what would be the sales pitch for why you should, you know, use SCSF?
Sure. SCSF is about building smart clients on .NET. It happens to consume many of our other deliverables, including CAB, Enterprise Library, and the Guidance Automation Toolkit. However, it provides value out of the box as is. So you can download the Smart Client Software Factory, immediately open it up, and start taking a look at the documentation and reading our how-to guides, reading our architectural descriptions, reading the discussions of the patterns at play, and you can get started very, very quickly. And there's that kind of a period where a project team or a lead architect is going to be thinking about, is this for me? What do I need to learn here? My team isn't committed yet. I need to learn a little bit. So there's that kind of exploratory evaluation phase. And you just download the package and get into the docs and get started. And of course, also right in there is the code. So you can start looking at the code and start seeing the reference implementations that are in there. So in addition to the docs, we have reference implementations, two of them currently, that build on CAB and Enterprise Library and address different scenarios to try to point out different architectural challenges and solutions. So you can look at the source code for those two reference implementations and start to identify how maybe those problems and how those solutions align into your space. So here you are as the dev lead and as the architect, and you've had a chance to do some of this evaluation, and you say, you know, I think this is actually pretty good. I think we can use this. So then what we would probably expect is you're going to be looking at CAB, you're going to be looking at Enterprise Library, and you'll want to progress and actually start rolling some of this out to your team. So also inside of here, in addition to the reference implementations, are guidance packages, which are Visual Studio Automation, you can kind of think of them as templates, or Visual Studio Automation the packages, that allow you to generate code and manipulate code and build systems. So you can, when you have the guidance package installed, you literally say, file new smart client application. And it spins out an application that looks remarkably like our reference implementation.
Mm.
And then you can right-click and say, right-click, smart client software factory, add a module, add a view, publish an event. And all of these things are kind of now baked into the Visual Studio environment to really enable throughput on your team. Now, beyond that, now, when you start to get into the customizability phase of the adoption, we have the source code for the guidance packages also included in the deliverable. So you decide that maybe our implementation of a new module is slightly out of whack with your expectations, or you have a new foundational module that you care about, or whatever else it might be. You can go ahead and customize that guidance package experience for your team, and then you roll out your customized one so your team can now be building the new application using the recommended practices that are coming down from your architecture team. So that's why we think it's a factory. And hopefully that helps show you kind of some of the parts that are inside.
That's really great too that you guys are providing source code. I mean, that's, as I understand, it's really part of your overall philosophy behind the Smart Client Software Factory, any other offerings of PMP, right? That you get source code, you don't just get binaries. So that if you don't like what it's doing, you can, you know, modify it to suit your specific needs.
Yeah, we're in the guidance business here. We're very sincere about that. Our goal is to help people build better applications on our platform. And you know, we could ship nothing but compiled frameworks and libraries and Visual Studio Automation, and that would help. But we really feel strongly that what helps more is for you to be able to take our code, read it, understand it, learn from it, customize it, and make it your own in your own application.
How does SCSF utilize Enterprise Library out of the just clicking the general smart client solution?
Yeah, I believe that the baked-in consumption of Enterprise Library is very simple and is around logging and exception handling. But our purpose there was primarily to show, logging, exception handling, and security. Our purpose there was to show kind of how Enterprise Library integrates into a work item and how you can publish those things as services. And, of course, recognizing that when people are building smart client applications, they do need authentication. They do need logging and exception management. And so we already had a very clear deliverable that provided that guidance. We just went ahead and consumed it.
And one of the things that the Smart Client Software Factory really, I guess, is a core central part of it, and you're going to be interacting with it if you use the technology, is the whole notion of a presenter, which gets into the whole MVP pattern. And for people who aren't familiar with that pattern, the Model View Presenter pattern, maybe you could talk a little bit about how that pattern sort of found its way into the software factory and how important you guys actually think it is in building a good smart client app.
Sure. As with many of the other things we've been talking about today, you kind of get the sense that decoupling and separation of concerns is something we care very strongly about. When you talk about composing a bit of user interface, you have to start thinking about the different parts that make it up. You have the model or the domain object or the part of the system which represents the underlying business entity, so maybe a customer object. You have the actual screen control itself. So, we can, in WinForms land, that may express itself as a user control. And then there's always some logic. There's always that logic that goes, in the click handler of the button or in the form load of the form. And that logic, traditionally has been you double-click on the form and you put the code right there. And you double-click on the button and you put the code right there. And there's a lot of problems with that from a maintenance standpoint and from a testability standpoint.
Right.
Now, the TDD guy in me gets very frustrated because it's almost impossible for me to test that code. But there's also just a legitimate concern around maintenance, that code is now baked into the view and is very tightly coupled to the UI part of it, when in fact it may not be, it isn't really responsible for much of that. It's mostly a coordinating affair of saying the user executed this gesture, which could be clicking on a button or dragging something or whatever. What does that mean inside the application? So the act of clicking on the gesture is a view thing. So that is code that fires inside the view. But the act of making a decision about how that gesture impacts the model and impacts the rest of the running application, that isn't really part of the view. So wouldn't it be nice if we could get that out into its own place? There are a number of well-defined patterns in the world for splitting these things apart. If you go back to the Microsoft Foundation classes days, there was DocView.
Right.
There are a number of patterns in the Java and other spaces. But two of the ones that come from the old world of Smalltalk are Model View Controller and Model View Presenter. And they're slight variations on each other, so for the moment we'll not worry about the distinctions.
Well, that's all for this episode of .NET Cast. Send us an email at .NETcast@sunburstsoftware.com and let us know what you think of the show. Take care, everybody.
The opinions expressed on .NETcast are solely those of the participants and not necessarily those of its sponsors or CMP media, its partners, or employees. .NETcast is a CMP DevNet podcast and is produced by Sunburst Software at sunburstsoftware.com. Additional production support has been provided by Digital Context at digitalcontext.com. CMP DevNet is solely responsible for the content of .NETcast.
Instead of choosing between Windows and Unix, MIS organizations are opting for a mix of the two operating systems. For seamless cross-platform operation, visit www.mkssoftware.com.